One of the single big regrets of my recent life was not being able to make the funeral of Haroon. So I'm very grateful to the house and to Auntie in particular for inviting me to do this. I want to offer these as notes of notes on our friendship, rather. I met Haroon essentially inside the art world, but most of our conversations centered on the cinema. So I want to turn to the cinema as a way of offering this homage. One of the things I was asked to do was to focus on questions of temporality, spatial processes, and choreographies of work in the moving image. And that's a huge subject, and it's not one I feel necessarily qualified to deal with. So what I think I'll do is to offer you a number of observations on this. And in order to give focus to these observations, I want to limit my talk to just one of the five films, Dihu's Subway. Subway is the film with the guard in the underground. I surprised myself by just how many connections Subway brought out for me. Every time I watched it, something else came to mind, something that always, almost always connected me to moments of cinema history, and in ways that was always a surprise. So let me just list a few for you. The first connection it made for me was a kind of nostalgic one, and it's to do with what we could call, I know this is problematic, but let's just call it that anyway, the ontology of cinema. Of the five films, it's the film which also evoked most poignantly for me what the cinema means as a labor of love, what it meant as a site for the staging of a certain love of labor, and this being the labor of being a figure of narrative. I can't, for instance, watch Subway now and watch that central figure without immediately thinking of the many absurdist heroes and anti-heroes whose life, but more importantly, whose work are immediately evoked and brought into being when we refer to the history of cinema. Chaplin, Lloyd, Sennett, but especially Keaton, Buster Keaton. Once the connection with Keaton and Subway is made, one can't then watch the film without somehow finding in it echoes of another central motif in the history of cinema. And this is the notion of mise-en-scène as a space in which what is played out is labor in its manifold registers, first and foremost as performance. No cinema worshipped more the twinning of work as performance and performance as a result of labor than early cinema. Thirdly, and in continuing this theme of recognizing Keaton, or the echoes, the ghostly echoes of Keaton in the central figure in Subway, once made this recognition, you can't then watch Subway without also seeing in it a kind of formal tristesse, a formative, rather, tristesse, a formative melancholia, an organizing sadness, which I think is also the stock in trade of that early cinema figure. This figure who was always forever caught not simply in the absurdities of labor, modern times, for instance, but also its equally ridiculous counterpoint of the impossible labor, the labor which delivers not only headache, but loss and fragility. And with that tristesse, with that sadness and melancholy about life's manifold absurdities, Subway evokes for me one more elective affinity with cinema, an early cinema. I want to mention this because it's probably the most obvious one, and yet in some ways the most profound connection that it has with early cinema. I want to save this film to now, I wanted to save it to now rather, because I want to highlight, I want to use it to highlight here both the connections Subway has to early cinema, but also its radical departures. The film I'm talking about, the film which has this formal, Subway has this formal connections with, is a film which in many ways serves as the inspiration both for this proceedings today and the show which is its namesake, and that is the canonical Lumiere Brothers film Workers Leaving the Lumiere Factory in Lyon from 1895. Now, I just want you to have a look at Subway again for a minute, and then we can talk about what I'm trying to say on. Okay, man, we get it. Thank you. Now, just to situate this, let's just remind ourselves of what Haroon had to say about Workers Leaving the Factory from his own film, Workers Leaving the Factory, from 1995. And I quote, "These images," those of you who remember Workers Leaving the Factory, it's just, you probably talked about it yesterday or Thursday, but just to remind you, it's a, you know, fixed shot of people walking out of the factory, literally on their way home after work. And he says this, "These images were supposed above all," I love that phrase, above all to show that it is possible to render movement in images. And then he goes on to say with a certain Benjaminian fervor, echoing many of the visual tropes from that famous Benjamin essay on the history of philosophy of history, he goes on to say this, "The remaining impression from this first screening is of people hurrying away, as if impelled by an invisible force. No one remains behind. The scene then changes, and another group of workers are seen hurrying away." 1975, I quote, "The Volkswagen factory, the workers are running as if something was drawing them away. Another change of location. 1926 in Detroit, the workers are running as if they had already lost too much time. In both these images and the accompanying text, and elsewhere is implied. Very much like Benjamin's Angel of History, workers are seen to be in flight for this elsewhere, in movement." Subway mimics this gesture of movement, this rendering of movement in image, but with, of course, one fundamental difference. There is no elsewhere in Subway. Labor is indeed in flight. It is running, But this time, it's as if it's been impelled towards by something. Like in the Lumiere film, the something in this question remains unnamed, enigmatically off-screen, and yet its magnetic pull is no less compelling, no less mesmerizing than that of the one in Lyon in 1895. So let's call this new space, with its equally mesmerizing gravitational pull, let's call this place somewhere. In somewhere, things work slightly differently. In a gesture which in cinema always, for me, spells an absence of choice, the workers in Subway move towards it. Somewhere exists to be obeyed, its distinguishing hallmark being this absence of choice. It is obeyed, and at some point in Haroun's workers' film, in Lyon in 1957 to be exact, the commentary tells us something that I think also has an importance for Subway. And he says, I quote, "They, the workers, are running as if they have something better, somewhere better to be." In Subway, the somewhere is almost certainly not better, and we know this because of its central figure, or rather, we know this because of the hand of the central figure. The object of our gaze falls on this hand, on its gestures, not because they are meaningful. In fact, quite the opposite. We know of somewhere's power because the gesture of the hand is so meaningless. There is a moment in Farocchi's film, after a century of flight by workers in Lyon, when he suddenly cuts to the opening shot of Antonioni's Deserto Rosso. And we hear the insistent, incantatory chorus of that somewhere. We see its mesmerizing flames, and we see the power of the somewhere. I've jumped, sorry, I just need to go back a little bit. How much time do I have, dude? At least 6 minutes?
Yes.
Okay, I'll try and stick to 6 minutes then. Okay. Right, sorry, I just skipped by mistake. Once we see such images, you sort of have to return again to Subway to register something else. And that's something to do with the contrast in between the face and the hand in our discussions of bodies in the cinema. We often speak about the place of the face in cinema. And as I watched Subway, I suddenly realized that the hand sometimes plays an equally pivotal role. I was going to show you a film here, but I'm going to skip it. On many occasions in the cinema, the hand, as in this case, literally writes a becoming. Subway proposes another role for the hand. It gives it a place in the writing of futility. Every time I think about futility in the cinema, I think of two scenes from two films that I particularly love. One is the tennis match in Antonioni's Blow Up, where the central character suddenly chances upon two miming artists playing a game of tennis, except that there is no ball and it's all a pretense. And yet the futility is underscored by will, because this is what they want to do. It somehow makes it meaningful. The other is the figure of André the character in Tarkovsky's Nostalgia, who meets a lunatic who tells him that if he could carry a candle across a pool, he could save the world. And so you watch the last, I think, well, almost the penultimate scene, 5-6 minutes long, of him attempting to do this. Again and again, the hand, in this particular instance, in both of those instances, sorry, I lost my train of thought. In both of those instances, the hand writes futility, but it also writes a presence for these characters. Now, in Subway, the opposite happens. The hand almost colludes in the outline of a disappearance. So much so that at some point, you find yourself asking again and again, is this real? Is this figure for real? Or is it fiction? He has so disappeared that one finds oneself asking that question. And even that final penultimate moment took me back to another film. This is John Ford's 1956 film, The Searchers. Especially that final sequence as the central character, Ethan, disappears into the sunset and you hear in the background the song, the lyrics of a song, what makes a man to wander, fly away, fly away. Thank you very much.